You're about to begin a brand new sugya. So I'll tell you two things about the sugya. So, and I should tell you the scary part first or the easier part first. So the scary part first is that it's a very, very long sugya. It's long, not only in terms of the Mamakomos, but it's a very, very long sugya. You just tell that in Yeshiva, it took us, I don't know if anyone has all the records of all the shiurim and YU, but someone who comes to my shiur, and some of you may know Dr. Berman, who's been attending my shiur for about 12 years, so he claimed that this was the longest, most amount of notes of any sugi in the past 12 years. So again, maybe this just means he was writing more, I don't know, but it was a long sugi. That's the scary part. So the less scary part is that it's a relatively easy sugi in the sense of it's not a Nezikin sugi, it's not a Bavakam sugi. It just kind of found its way. It's really an Orach Chaim sugi, it's really a Halacha L'Maaseh sugi, and it's some very, very real halacha l'maaseh applications of it. So it may take us a while to do it, but it's going to be less halt and cup than about the details of tzraras and kochah kegufo dami. So we'll try to attempt to begin the sugya. How in the world do we even get into the sugya? If you take a look at the name of the sugya, Devarim shebichsav yeta rasha lama bi'alpeh. It's an interesting continuation of last sugya, but halacha marsinah has nothing to do with that. Just purely coincidental. It refers to the basic question about psukim, same psukim. Are you, when you say a pasuk, do you have to say a pasuk from a sefer? You have to read it from a sefer Torah or maybe a chumash? Or can you just rattle up psukim b'al peh? Is there anything wrong with just saying dvarim shebichsav b'al peh? How in the world did this sneak into Maseches Bava Kama? It really came through the back door. So let's take a look just how we even got here and then hopefully begin at least the very, very beginnings of the sugya to develop today. So it started out with a word in the Mishnah that was ambiguous. The Mishnah listed off the Arba Avos Nezikin, so three out of the four are very easy to understand. Which of these four is not like the other? The one that we don't know what it means. We don't know what the word Mava means. Sure, we know. We know what a heifer is, a fire. We know what a carrot. We know this. Mava, we don't know what the word means. So my Mava. So comes the Gemara and says, Rav Amma Mava is a Adam. Mava is describing an Adam HaMazik. And Shmuel says, Mav is describing a shein, an animal that's eating, walks into somebody else's property, eats up his fruit. That's what the word textually Mav means. So now again, in terms of lahalacha, there's no real machlokes Rav and Shmuel. Everybody agrees that an adam amazik is chayiv, and everybody agrees that shein amazik is chayiv. These are mishnayos throughout the Masechta. It's just a question, which one made the official heading of the Arba Avos Nezikin? Now, truth to be told, hopefully we'll see in weeks and months to come, there are many, many more than Arba Avos. There are actually 13 of us, and there were 24 of us, so the four Avos Nezikin are a little bit misleading. They're not absolute four. Those are four main categories, but there are a lot of other, I don't want to call them subcategories because those are told us, but the other co-main categories as well. So, but the question is, which one is the word Mava referring to? So the Gemara tries to bring proofs as to which one it is based on different psukim in Nach, which use the shoresh of the word Mava in different contexts. So Rav Amma Mava is a Adam, Dechsev Amma Shomer, Asaboka, Vegamlailim, Tevayun, Bayu. That's referring to a person who is the Lashon Tevayun. Ushmul Amma Mava is a Shein, Dechsev Ech Nechmas, Uesav Nivu Matzpunav. There's a pasuk that in the Navi Avadia that uses the word nivu, and nivu there is referring to something that's being eaten, something that's being revealed, the whole story. So the Gemara is trying back and forth and back and forth. At the end of the day, the Gemara says neither the psukim were absolutely convincing. But what got us into our part of the sugi is the following. My mashma, the Gemara just quoted this pasuk in Navi, and the Gemara is not even sure what the pasuk in Navi means. So the Gemara says, so what does the pasuk in Navi mean? Kedimetagim Rav Yosef. So Rav Yosef gave the Aramaic translation of this pasuk in Navi. Ichtin is bolish Esav iskalin matmu rohi. Okay, again, we're not going to learn the pasuk in Avadi now, but the bottom line, the words that are most important for our sugya is those three magic words, kedimetagim Rav Yosef. That the Gemara was searching for a translation for an ambiguous pasuk in Navi, and the Gemara says, "Oh, Rav Yosef, he was the Matargim. He was the one who translated. He had access to the proper Aramaic translation as to what this pasuk meant." So the Rishonim pick up on a slight nuance in the sugya, which is going to develop into our entire sugya. Namely, was it just coincidental that Rav Yosef happened to be the one who knew the Targum? There could have been 100 other people who also knew the Targum, or is there something deliberate going on here? And what leads us, some Rishonim, to believe that there is something deliberate going on, because this is not the only place that the Gemara does this. The Gemara does this in multiple places, where the Gemara is searching for some kind of a meaning of some esoteric pasuk somewhere, and the Gemara says, oh, Kiddim Etagim Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef, he's the one who translated the psukim into Aramaic for us. Why should we pick on Rav Yosef? What did Rav Yosef have? What characteristic did Rav Yosef have that maybe lead us to believe this is deliberate? So we know from the Gemara many places, Rav Yosef was blind. Rav Yosef was a summa. Rav Yosef could not see. And the question is there any connection between those two statements? Is there any connection between the historical reality that Rav Yosef was blind and the fact that he seems to want always right and left? He's the one they call for whenever they need a translation of a pasuk. So Tosus takes on this issue in the second of the Mamre Kamas. Tosus says, not Rav Yosef. Tosus says, the reason why the Gemara always quotes Rav Yosef is Lefishaya Baki B'Targum, because he was just an expert at Targum. That's it. Tosus says, it could have been somebody else, it could have been this way, but he happened to have been the one who was the expert in Targum. Shiyesh Kamin Yari Targum. He says there are a lot of different sugyas in Targum. He was the one who knew Targum the best. So now Tosus makes reference, V'lo Kidepirish B'Yalma. This is unlike those who have who have given the following interpretation. So Tosus almost like pushes it away and says, don't tell me a story like some other pshat that's about to be presented. So just in case you think this is just a don't tell me, this is a Tosus Rabbeinu Peretz. There are Rishonim who say this pshat. We know there are many, many Balei HaTosfos. There are hundreds of Balei HaTosfos. So there are some things that appear in our Tosfos that don't appear in other Tosfos. Other things that appear in other Tosfos don't appear in our Tosfos. So the Tosfos Rabbeinu Peretz, which we have a full, we have the full Tosfos Rabbeinu Peretz on Maseches Bava Kamma. We don't have it in all Maseches. We have it on Bava Kamma. So in Tosfos Rabbeinu Peretz, this pshat is in fact advanced. And there are other Rishonim who also advance this pshat. So Tosfos here machs it back, just pushes it away. But it is a viable pshat in Rishonim. What is this pshat that Tosfos is rejecting? For Loki de Pirish B'Yama, the Fishahaya Sagi Nohor. There are those who say that it was Davka Rav Yosef who was the one who was always called upon for Targum, not because necessarily he knew the Targum better, but because he was blind. Udvarm Shvichsav, Iyata Rasha La'omar Alpeh. And since the halacha is, Tosfos is referencing a Gemara Gidon, we'll see in a moment, since the halacha is that Sukkim, B'chsav, including here Torah, Nevi'im, and K'suvim, or P'sukim, one is only allowed to read P'sukim from the K'sav, from a text. One is not allowed to recite P'sukim B'al-Peh. And since one is not allowed to recite P'sukim B'al-Peh, Rav Yosef would have quite a difficulty learning. It means he can't see. So for him, everything's going to be B'al-Peh. So how would the worker Rav Yosef learn? So the answer is he can't. He obviously cannot learn Tanakh in the original text. He has to have it translated into Aramaic. Aramaic, you can read whatever you want. That's not the text. That's not the Dvarim Shebichsav. So therefore, because of this halachic concern that Rav Yosef didn't want to violate this prohibition of saying Pesukim B'Yalpeh, therefore everything was translated for him and he became a world-class expert in Targum. And that is why the Gemara always mentions Kiddim B'Targim Rav Yosef. So Tosfos now has two very, very different approaches historically why Rav Yosef is called upon for the Targum in multiple places in the Gemara. According to the pshat that Tosfos is advancing, it is not for any halachic reasons. It's just practically, he happened to be just, by golly, coincidentally, he was the one who knew Targum very well. According to the Yesh Omrim that Tosfos is rejecting, or the Tosfos Rabbeinu Peretz's opinion, no, there was a real halachic reason. Because he was blind and he couldn't say the psukim about that, therefore he was forced, in a sense, to become that expert in Targum. So Tosfos tells you why they don't like this. Tosfos says, "Well, kachayom targum." That's why Rav Yosef targum. So Tosfos says it's wrong. You know why this pshat is not correct? The mishum eis lasos amahasam deshari, the einuchah eis lasos godem izeh. Because there is a Gemara Maseches Gittin. Hopefully, we can spend a lot of time on as the sugya develops. That the Gemara Maseches Gittin tells us that this prohibition of saying psukim yapeh can sometimes be violated. Sometimes you're allowed to violate it if there's some very, very great tzorech, what's called eis lasos lashem. So I don't want to totally define this term yet because it's going to develop as the sugya goes on. But it basically boils down to that there's some kind of a shaset chak, there's something that occurs that's going to make it very, very difficult to learn otherwise. And therefore, eis lasos lashem, under very unique extenuating circumstances, this isser is permitted to be put on the side in order to enhance limud haTorah. So therefore, Tosfos says, well, for Rabbi Yosef, to insist that Rabbi Yosef can never say psukim from Chumash, can never learn Tanakh in the original, that would be very, very difficult. That would clearly impede his ability to learn. And therefore, Tosfos doesn't believe that Rabbi Yosef was subject to this issur altogether. So Be'ikaron, fundamentally, saying psukim yapeh would be a halachic problem, says Tosfos, but they don't believe that Rabbi Yosef would be subject to this issur. based on the sugya in Maseches Gittin of Eis La'asos. Obviously, Rabbeinu Peretz, obviously these Yesh Omrim that Tosfos is rejecting, did not think that that was a proper application of Eis La'asos. And again, we have a lot of work to figure out why it should or should not be part of Eis La'asos, because we have no idea what Eis La'asos means altogether. But so we have a lot of things to determine this sugya. But again, the basic issue has already been raised for us, and the basic two of the sugya is beginning to open up, that according to at least some Rishonim, there was a very real halachic obstacle that Rav Yosef had to overcome, and the only way to overcome it was to learn in Aramaic. And even though Tosfos says that that wasn't the pshat, because there were other ways to overcome the halachic obstacle, Tosfos agrees fundamentally that except for the blind person, this would have been a problem. There is something on the table here that we have to deal with, but Tosfos felt that we have a better solution, Eis La'asos, whatever in the world the details of that solution are. So before we begin to tackle this sugya about why Rav Yosef did or didn't do what he did, we have to ask ourselves, well, what is the sister in the first place? What are the parameters of the sister? Before we can discuss the details of when this prohibition applies, what the parameters are, we have to know where it comes from. What is the source for the sister in the first place? So the primary source for this sugya begins in Maseches Gittin, at the third of the Ramakamas. So the Gittin and Daf Samach Mabez, Doresh Rabbi Yehuda bar Nachmeni, v'tu gemani de Bishir ben Lakish. The Rabbi Yehuda bar Nachmeni, who was the translator for Reish Lakish, we know in the olden days, so the Amora would basically, would say the Shia, you have hundreds of thousands of Tamidim, couldn't scream, so limit how much hot water you could drink. So he would say, he would talk very, very low, and then there was a person whose job was to be the Metargim. So the Metargim would, first of all, he would say the Shia much louder, and he would also translate it. So it wasn't just, didn't just say the words, verbatim. He would translate it and boost it up a little bit, make it a little bit clearer for the Tamidim. So Rabbi Yehuda ben Nachmeni was the Metargim of Reish Lakish, and he had the following drasha. Ksiv, it says in Bashas Kisisa, Ksov luchas advar ma'ela, uchsiv ki alpi advar ma'ela. Torah says that Rabbi Moshe Rabbeinu goes back for the second time to receive the Luchos Shniyos. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to him, Ksov luchas advar ma'ela, write down the words of Torah, because based on the words of this Torah, I'm going to be cursed to bris with Klal Yisrael. So the Gemara is already sensitive to the fact that there seems to be a little bit of a change in the nuance. Is the Torah written or is the Torah be'alpeh? So the Torah starts by saying, Sov lecha, write it down. And then it says, Ki alpi advar me'ela, which is more of a lashon of a lashon be'alpeh. So which one is it? So the answer is opposite. There are two parts. There are clearly two chalakim of Torah. Now, the fact that there are two chalakim of Torah, that we know from many, many other places, you don't have to go very far from the Chumash itself to realize that. Obviously, there's Torah Shemichsav because we have a text of Torah Shemichsav that was given to us back from Moshe Rabbeinu. But it's clear within the Torah Shemichsav that there is a Torah Shemapeh. The Torah speaks multiple places. The Torah makes references many, many places of an oral discussion and tradition and elaboration to the words of the text of the Torah Shemichsav itself. But here, the Torah speaks about both the Torah Shemichsav and the Be'alpeh in almost two different categories. Ksov luchos advar ma'ela, these things have to be written, and the other things, ki alpi advar ma'ela, ela means these. So some things are written and some things are said be'alpeh. Hakeitzad. So comes Rabbi Yehuda bar Nachmeni, the Metagma Reish Lakish, with the following drasha. Devarim shebichsav yeta rasha lomun alpeh. From the fact that the Torah divides up into two distinct categories, there's a Torah Shebichsav and there's Torah Shebapeh, this is here to teach me a halacha that they have to remain distinct. That you have to have Torah Shebichsav has to be Bichsav, and Torah Shebapeh has to be Bialpeh, and you're not supposed to mix the two. And therefore, there are two Isurim that are derived from these Pesukim. One is, Dvarim Shebichsav, Yitosh Ramapeh, that's Asugya. You're not supposed to say Pesukim out of a text. And number two, you're not supposed to say Torah Shebapeh, Mitoch Hiksav. So you're not supposed to write down the Torah Shebapeh. Now again, obviously we have a lot to talk about that, because, Harayah, we have Torah Shebapeh written down. So we have what to discuss. So comes the Gemara and says, these are two distinct Isurim, that, and again, for our purposes, the one we're focusing on now is, Dvarim Shebichsav, Yitosh Ramapeh. So one could raise a question when one reads this Gemara Maseches Gittin, just how literal one takes this Gemara. Here the Gemara is quoting a Pasuk to this effect, which usually leads us to believe that this is a Din Deraisa. Generally speaking, when you have a Gemara quoting Menon, immediately handing a Pasuk for something, that 9 out of 10 times translates to Din Deraisa, but not always. Every once in a while, the Gemara will quote a Pasuk, and we'll throw our hands up and say, well, it's not a real Din Deraisa, it's only a Din Midrabanan. So why is the Gemara quoting a Pasuk? It's an Asmachta. it's a hint, it's referred to, it's alluded to, but it's not a real bona fide din deraisa. Now, in order to make that statement, to take a Gemara that quotes a pasuk and turn it into an asmachta, you have to have good reason to do that. So sometimes the Gemara itself will do it for us. The Gemara itself says, "Midrabbana kruv asmachta bi'alma." So the Amoraim understood how to learn better than we do. And sometimes it's not clear in the Gemara, but sometimes it's clear from context. Namely, the Gemara may not spell out something as a derabbanan or asmachta, but if you look at the sugya, or you look at other sugyas, you look at related sugyas, you'll walk away with the picture, there's something here that doesn't sound deraisa. The way the Gemara is treating this iser, in a certain manner, this is a very, very derabbanan type of a mindset. So that becomes very questionable, what our take is, what our view, what our mindset of this sugya is. Do we take this Gemara kipshuto, that we're dealing with a real bona fide iser deraisa, that's exactly what the psukim mean, and therefore that we're dealing with deraisas here, and we have to address it through the world of deraisas? What we're saying now, this whole thing, that's not what the pasuk really means. The pasuk just means, ketosh b'chsam, tosh b'peh. The fact that you have to keep this b'chsam, this b'peh, and not let it switch between the two, maybe that's only a derabbanan. Maybe it's only an asmachta b'yama. Now again, we have to have proofs from the Gemara to make such a very, very gutsy statement. And number two, we would have to scratch our heads a minute and ask, why in the world did Chazal make such an issur derabbanan? It's very, very strange. You know, some issurim derabbanan are obvious why. You don't need a PhD in nuclear physics to figure out why Chazal said you shouldn't move a pencil on Shabbos. We're afraid if you can move a pencil, next thing you know, you're going to write with the pencil. There are some things that are obvious. There are other things that are less obvious. Why would Chazal one fine day wake up and say, gee, I had a great idea, let's not say Pesukim Yal Peh anymore? What terrible disaster is going to happen if people say Pesukim Yal Peh? So if we want to go down that route of taking this Gemara and Gittin and almost like knocking it down and saying, well, it's not a real deraisa, it's only the Rabbanon, we better find Gemaras that support that theory, and we better come up with some very good creative reasons as to why Chazal made that issue in the first place. So I'm not saying it's impossible to go down that route, but it's gonna be a tough route to try to map out. Whereas if you take the simple Pshat Gemara, it's the deraisa, no shaila about it, that's it, it's the deraisa, finish, end of discussion, so then good, then we have a deraisa on our hands. So we have a few Gemaras that talk about this issur. We have Gemaras and Rishonim that talk about this issur. And within those Gemaras, we may be able to find the answer to some of the questions that are bothering us. We may be able to determine whether we're dealing with the deraisa or whether we're dealing with the derabbanan. And in the process of dealing with the derabbanan, if it's true that we're dealing with the derabbanan, so then we may be able to come up with a reason or multiple reasons for this issur derabbanan. So again, so our ultimate goal is really to go back to the Tosafot Bava Kamma Daf Gimel, that there was some Rishonim who maintained that what's going on in between the lines in Bava Kamma Daf Gimel, the fact that Rabbi Yosef is being called upon to attack Rabbi Yosef, is because there are halachic reasons that were preventing Rabbi Yosef from saying the psukim Baal Peh, in a sense. Since he was blind, every pasuk he would say, by definition, would be Baal Peh. So there were very real halachic reasons that were preventing him. The Baalei HaTosfos and our sugya were not comfortable with that pshat. They thought that if that was the problem, there were much better solutions than turning everything into Aramaic. So they didn't believe that that was fundamentally the pshat, which forces us back to the Gemara and Gittin to evaluate, to analyze this issur altogether. It's hard to talk about the details, whether this should be a problem, should it be a problem, was Rabbi Yosef doing it, not doing it, unless we really understand what the ABCs of this issur are. So the only thing we've discovered up until now is that there are psukim that are quoted, but we have not yet discovered, does the Gemara mean it's a deraisa to set up psukim, or does the Gemara mean midirabbanan or kras machta bialma? And alatzat, that it means that, then we have to prove from Gemaras that that's a viable pshat, and then we have to come up with some good reasons as to why this issue should be made. So at least we know what direction we're going in. Hopefully, mention tomorrow, we'll try to crack this code a little bit and try to read through one or two of these Gemaras to see what led a group of Rishonim to believe that maybe we really are only dealing with the Rabbanan. There actually is no deraisa on the table here, but hopefully, mention tomorrow, we'll see.